levels of power and how to use them. Recorded in front of a live audience with best-selling author and medical intuitive, Dr. Carolyn Mace.
Thank you for joining me. It is a pleasure to be with you. This evening I want to talk to you about the three levels of power associated with health, how you can use those levels of power to enhance your health as well as your life. It's my hope that you'll leave here this evening with a sense of genuine empowerment, and I choose that word deliberately, that you'll feel a sense of, I can handle crises in my life better, I can handle my health better, I'm going to know what to do when I feel power leaving my system. I find power to be an intriguing subject. I think everybody does. Everybody is intrigued with empowered people when they see them. And you're intrigued with yourself when you feel that way. Sometimes you can't get over it. And you're intrigued when you feel without power. You can't get over that either. In any event, power is the common ingredient within the human experience, and more so, it is the common ingredient in health, and certainly in the loss of health. More than anything else, what I've learned in my work as a medical intuitive is that what I'm actually reading in your system is whether or not you have an empowerment schedule inside of you. Schedule means a timing, your past, your background. Whether or not you have a sense of empowerment in you at all. And if not, where did your power go? Is it in your past? Is it in your childhood? Is it in your attitudes? Something has taken your power. So when I do a reading in the area of medical intuition, that's exactly what I'm reading. What is a medical intuitive anyway? I mean, actually, it's not a profession. You're going to find that often. I'd like to give you a reference point so that you know what I do behind closed doors with this occupation. I find it as strange as everybody else does, by the way. I developed the skill of medical intuition in 1982, and it sort of happened spontaneously. It wasn't something that I studied. Nobody can study this, at least not back then, maybe in the future, but certainly not then. And it started out as sort of a baby skill. You know, I didn't know what to do with it. I could care less. In the meantime, I was a publisher. But it kind of had a mind of its own and emerged more and more, and I could sense the presence of illness in other people, and I didn't know what to do with it because I was a publisher. You don't go up to someone and say, hi there, you're sick. You know, I mean, you kind of keep it to yourself. But then in 1984, I went to a conference, and I was invited as a publisher. And yet while I was there, someone came up to me and said, see that doctor over there? He studies people who are medically intuitive. So I thought, why is someone telling me that? I mean, did I have a sign on me? Baby medical intuitive? I mean, come on, right? So anyway, I went up to him and I said, can I talk to you? I mean, I think I'm one of those people. And he does not impress easily, thank God. But at the time, it intimidated me. And he said, you any good? And I said, I don't know. He says, can you see a brain tumor? I said, I don't know, maybe. I have no idea. And he said, well, you know, I don't need anyone to tell me that somebody else's energy is off. I can see that. He said, how do you work? I said, I don't know. So, I mean, you got to understand, I was a publisher. All I knew is that something was different in me. And so he said, I'll call you sometime. And that's how the relationship began. And he would call and he would say, you know, I have somebody in my office and I'm trying to look for the cause of why they're losing energy in their body, why they're losing power. This is the language we began to use. And as I started to scan them, I realized that I was looking at profiles of the human energy system that were extraordinary, not at all the way I thought. Now I believe that we are involved in an evolutionary pattern of three different levels of power, and that these levels of power embrace the dynamics going on in our physical body, that power influences our physical body, our emotional body, our psychological body, our spiritual body. Each one of these corners of ourselves, the four quadrants of ourselves, is a power factor. And we are involved in the management in each one of these, and that each one is affected by the manner in which we use power. We are intriguing, shall we say, machines. Spiritual machines. I mean, it sounds like a funny way to put it, but actually it's true, because we're so well organized in this area. Our anatomical system, from an energetic point of view, is as well organized and specific as our physical one. were not randomly put together. We're well organized, well scripted, and the relationship between our energetic body and our physical body is intimate and deeply, deeply connected. A thought form influences our physical body. Our physical body interacts with our thought forms. We are one in the same energy system. So when I do a reading on you, how can I not be reading a profile of your energetic system, which is reflected completely in what goes on in your physical body? The other thing I want to investigate with you in this evening is the fact that these three levels of power that I'm going to be introducing to you represent, from my point of view, the three levels of evolution that all of us need to move through in this dynamic of what we call spiritual development or consciousness development. We don't just jump into spirituality as a random process. The fact is, I really believe it's sort of a well-scripted path in which each of us needs to experience separate and very well-designed levels of spiritual learning lessons. We learn through stages, and each of us will go through those stages. We'll move through a tribal stage, we'll move through an individual stage, we'll move through a spiritual, archetypal, symbolic stage. But we will each of us move through these three levels of power, because that is, in fact, the way we are meant to evolve, and meant to evolve together. The human energy system is comprised of data banks. In addition to three levels of power, we have data banks. These data banks contain the information in a very specific logging system about our life. Do you want to know something? I don't think there's one thought form that we have that isn't recorded somewhere in our system. I don't think there's one thought form that you've ever had, or one inspiration that you've ever had about life, that isn't somehow an influence in our biological system. I think that we are that well scripted. I think the power we engage with is that well organized within ourselves. Power is what we call energy at the physical level. It's not just a negotiating force externally, but power is actually energy at the physical level. And when I'm doing a reading on you, I'm reading the roadmap of how you lose power within the physical world, how you release your power in terms of the various pathways of your life. A roadmap is exquisite to call it, because you can follow your own roadmap. You can go back and begin to chart your childhood, your adolescence, your 20s, your 30s, your 40s, and you literally can see the way in which your power has moved out of you like rivers, like tributaries off the main river. And you can see exactly the places that you're still feeding off this river with your precious life force. And if you really got into it, I mean really got into it, and started to measure how much power was going where, you'd be absolutely shocked when you realize, I've got so much power to spend each day, and 80%, 70% is going into my history. It's a phenomenal thing to think about. All issues of power are biologically connected. I want you to remember that, because it's ordinary for us to separate issues of power and then there's our body. No. When I'm teaching you this, I'm teaching you a system that is one and the same thing. So when you leave here from now on, when you're walking around the rest of your life, and you find yourself getting involved in a power struggle or feeling powerless, from now on, you're going to step outside, you're going to say to someone, wait just a minute here, I got to see what's going on in my body. And when you feel your body shaking at one level, or getting one of those colds where your hands get ice cold because something is draining you, from now on, what you tell yourself is, power's leaving my body. How fast is it going? Where is it going? To whom is it going? What's taking it? So you no longer sit back and say, I'm having just a biological reaction. No, no, no. From now on, you start telling yourself, I'm losing power. I'm losing it fast. I've got to take a deep breath. I've got to step out of that situation. And I've got to pull my spirit back. You're going to start working with yourself from a totally different point of view. I'm going to launch into a description of the human energy system. I'm going to teach you to think of it the way I now work with it. And three separate levels. Each level is an incredibly complex and yet incredibly simple level of consciousness. The first level is tribal. Tribal power is that which I call the group mind. We all begin our evolution in tribal power. We all begin as part of a group system of thought. That's what family is. That's what society is. When we're born, we're plugged in to this level of life. We're plugged into these perceptions. We learn about our ethnic history. We're plugged into a religion. We're plugged into a belief about our heritage. We're plugged into the current trends in the world we live in. We're plugged into political ideas. These are all group thought forms. So what does that mean? Translated, when you're plugged into group thought forms, you are literally working at the speed of a group. You move at the speed of a group. Your biology moves at the speed of the group, and more importantly, your sense of power moves at the speed of the group. So what does that mean? Let's say you wanted to heal something. You're going to heal at the speed of a group. Get this one. You're going to create at the speed of a group. You have a wonderful creative idea, and then you decide that you are someone who runs your ideas past a number of people for approval, for empowerment. You will create at the speed of those group thought forms. It's absolutely fascinating. That's tribal power. Now, let's say you move into individual power, the next level of power. Individual power reflects the self. Now, think about this. The tribal energy influences, controls, determines. By the way, you're doing this to others, so let's not put it in the victim, like this is just you. I can promise you, as I describe this, you're doing this to others. What you do at the tribal level is you determine who someone can and cannot love. You determine what is right for someone else and what isn't, because that's the authority of a tribe. Okay? Then one day, at one point in our lives, we're all going to sit up and say, I don't want to be controlled by a group anymore. I want to experience life according to my own choices. I want to move out of tribal thought forms. That begins the journey of the self into a different level of perception, the evolution into individual power. And what you're actually saying is, I want to take responsibility for the quality of thought forms I have in my head. I want to take responsibility for the attitudes I plug my spirit into and for the consequences of those attitudes. Let me tell you, when you're in group thought form, when you're in the tribe, you're going to talk like this. You're going to say, if someone said to you, why did you do this? Why do you think this way? You'll shift into tribal language immediately. You won't say, well, I think this way because of this. You'll shift into tribal. You'll say, I really don't think that way, but that's the way I grew up. They did it to me. And you'll blend, you'll erase your individuality into your tribal history as if to say, I'm not responsible. It's the way I grew up, and therefore we, the tribe, determined what I see and what I think. Whereas when you are fully standing in the individual level of consciousness, you have to take full responsibility for every single thing you believe, good, bad, or indifferent, because you're operating from a very different level of power. But when you're operating from that level of power, here's the positive side. Let's say you develop an illness. The tribe says this illness can't be healed in a quick period of time. But somebody who has a strong sense of I can look at the tribal mind and say, well, that may be true for you, but this is what's true for me. And you can choose a very different path of healing, and the speed is different. You can heal it much faster than the speed at which a tribe moves, because you're operating on a much different thought form. You've got a higher altitude going. It's an incredibly different sense of speed. Now you're going to move to the symbolic level. At the symbolic level of power, this is the most extraordinary level, because the symbolic allows you to separate from yourself and look at your life from a much higher point of view, as though you're observing another life in front of you so that you can learn from it without that feeling of being threatened, as if you can learn from it as though it was part of a marvelous spiritual design, a design meant to give you insight and spiritual empowerment. I want to share a story with you that reflects, in my opinion, these levels of power operating within one person simultaneously who's trying to understand these three levels. This is a woman whose name is Julie. Julie and her husband Raymond had a hemophiliac son. His name is Barry. Julie did not come from a strongly spiritual background. She was not a person who was forever looking for the symbolic meaning or the spiritual meaning. And she was a pragmatist. She had a son who she had to watch every single moment of the day because the slightest thing could cause horrible bleeding, and she always had to look out for this boy. And she also saw the limitations of conventional medicine in trying to treat him. She said that as a mother of a hemophiliac child, you develop a real eye for scanning a room, seeing if there's a wet floor, any place he can hurt himself, any corner of a table he can hit, and you learn to guide him, protect him, move things so that the room is as safe as possible. She said she and her husband, Raymond and Barry, were at a restaurant one day, and, you know, obviously she took a look. The place felt safe. Then what happened after that is Raymond went to pay the bill. She got up, turned around, and Barry got up from the table and slipped on the floor and immediately began to wrench in pain, and the weak knee in him swelled up and the bleeding began. When she saw that, her first thought was, of course, I need help. I need a physician. I need a physician. She watches her son, and he's going into a more and more serious trauma. Then she has this thought, God, help me. She turns around, and this man says, let me help you. She hadn't seen him before. He comes over, he wraps a tourniquet around Barry's leg, puts his hand on there. The swelling begins to go down. Now, this whole time, Julie's watching her son. When she gets up to turn around to thank him, he's gone. Not only is he gone, she didn't even see him walk out of the restaurant. Now, you could say to yourself, well, she obviously was focused on her boy for so long that he had time to walk out. No. As she tells the story, she literally turned to thank him right after his hand was on his knee, and he was gone. Now, she doesn't necessarily draw the conclusion that that was an angel, that that was something that happened from a much higher point of power, because her own consciousness had detached from the physical world of what could and could not happen, the tribal world of reality, and entered into that higher notion that from the symbolic spiritual view, anything can happen. But that's exactly what happened. She had detached from the power of that level of consciousness and had entered that transcendent level that said, I can access any level of power if I need to change physical form, to heal my body, to heal my life, to look for guidance. You'll always operate on these three levels of power. We'll always take physical data, and then we'll run it through our emotional energy, and then we'll run it through the spiritual. This is the way we're designed for this. We'll always search for the meaning of everything. The next important thing you want to learn about this type of power, about three levels of power operating in you simultaneously, is what does this mean to you personally? How would it change your life? How would it make an impact? The first thing you want to realize is that this three levels of consciousness operating behind your eye means you're no longer five-sensory. You're not a five-sensory being. And quite frankly, it's kind of interesting because as we prepare to enter the next millennium, it's becoming obvious to a lot of us that we're not five-sensory. We have emotional senses, we have mental senses, we have intuitive senses, we have color sensory, we have all kinds of sensory systems. But as you redefine your schemata of power, it's going to become more and more natural for you to realize you're perceiving things more than with five senses. In fact, that's going to seem almost primitive, absolutely almost primitive. So that's number one. And as you learn that you are multisensory, you're going to expand what that can do for you, how you gather data. It's going to change your entire relationship with what you call reality. Now, when you think of power, I want you to hold in your mind that power is life force. Power is prana. Power is grace. Any word you'd like to use. I like grace because I've come to believe that power is also conscious. It's not just an electricity that floats through the air. It's a conscious source of energy. And you draw to yourself the quality of power that, if you will, matches your own consciousness. Right? If you're feeling positive, loving thoughts, I'm telling you, that's the kind of power you're going to draw to yourself. And that's not a coincidence. Like indeed attracts like. If you focus on negative, that's the kind of power you're going to draw to yourself. Not because you're being punished, shall we say, but rather it's because that's the quality of power you want to digest into your system. And it feeds on itself. And it gives you depressing thoughts, not because you're supposed to have depressing thoughts, but it's because that's the only kind of power you can sense in yourself. And that's why it comes to your system in that way. Now, as you work with yourself, I'm going to give you an image, because this image is something that you can use anytime, any place. And actually, as you get used to this image, you're going to find that using this is a perfect way to sense whether power's leaving your system or coming into your system. Imagine that you have 100 circuits of energy coming in through the top of your head. And each circuit is an energy unit, like an electrical wire. These circuits come into your body, they come through your system, they fuel your cell tissue, they fuel your blood, they fuel every organ in your body, and they fuel your thoughts, they fuel your creativity, they fuel everything that is your life. They fuel your environment, everything you do, everything you are, absolutely everything. When we are fully in charge of these circuits, when we're present, we have these circuits in present time. Our body thrives, our creativity thrives, we feel like we're on top of the world. But when we are investing these circuits into things that are negative, thoughts that are negative, memories that are negative, we're losing power. Now, I want you to pay attention to this image. When I do a reading on you, what I do is I get your name and your age, and literally I'm going to take you into your data banks now so you know exactly the kind of energy, what I look for in you, because this is how I discern how much power you have, what you're doing with that, how strong it is, what it looks like. Okay? When I get your name and age, we're going to go through it. I see energy coming in through your system. And then I see what your energy is invested in and how much of your energy goes into those investments. And this is the order in which you invest, and these are the parts of the body that you're going to draw your power from, because you're going to keep this in mind. You have 100 circuits coming in. What if you're investing 140 circuits a day? What if you're going into energetic debt? What does that mean? What that means is you're going to take a loan on energy from someplace. And as a rule, you're going to take it from your cell tissue. You're going to pull extra energy out of your cell tissue that you're supposed to use for the maintenance of your cell tissue. And you're going to invest it into the management of memories you should long ago have let evaporate, or relationships you should long ago have released. But you're financing, if you will, the dead of your life with the life of your life. I'm going to connect that dot here, okay? So, these are your data banks, and this is the material you have in that, so you know exactly what goes where. I call them data banks in other traditions. They might be called chakras, or they might be called the lotus centers. I use data banks because I like the image it gives you. It's a very technical system. You want to have a sense that it holds every thought form. It contains every attitude. This is not a vague system. It is a highly involved computer. Just look at this. Do you think we could create this computerized, highly technical world if, in fact, we didn't have some pattern of that within us? All right? That's the way our own system operates. Now, your first data bank, you're sitting on it. If I'm doing a reading on you, this is where I find out what your history is, what your biology is, what your sense of family is, your tribe, everything your family told you, everything that you absorbed from your culture. For example, how many of you have the sense that it's better to be thin than not thin? And I mean skinny, thin, than not thin. Okay, we got that. And do you get that notion from the outside tribe? It's determining your weight. I just want you to connect that. Which means what? It means a part of your circuits are leaving that part of your body and connecting to a tribal thought form, which is determining your weight, which determines how you feel about yourself and your weight, which determines what you eat. You're sitting in a restaurant. You think it's just you? You got a whole tribe sitting there ordering your lunch. You got to figure this out, because that's exactly what's happening. This part of your body also connects the energy as to whether or not you need to work with a group. Some of us are tribal by nature. We need to have group contact. And this is the part of us that says, I function better in a group. What kind of people are that? Corporate people, military people, they like that group energy. Okay? Your second data bank is in your hip, sexual genital area, and lower back. What have you got there? This is where you have all your financial data. Isn't that fun? This is your financial data is in your lower back. It's in your hip area. You think it's in the bank, and you're wrong. This is also the center. that talks about one-to-one power with another person. Okay? This is the center that has your issues of control. Are any of you controlling? No, I didn't think so. I could tell on your faces. All right. No control in this audience. So this is this part of your body. Now, I want you to know something. When you're in a controlling dynamic, this is not a private matter. If you could see energy, you'd see it's an absolute public exchange of energy between people. You would see your energy leaving your body and grabbing onto that other person, and in turn, that person with you. I don't care if that person's on the other side of the world and you here, if you have that kind of relationship, I promise you, get up in the morning, you're getting dressed, and in the morning what you're doing is blasting that person with some of your energy, and I don't care where you are, right? That's just the way energy works, right? This is also the part of your body that has to do with creativity. Isn't that interesting? But it's logical because this is the part of your body that biologically creates. So this is your creativity center. And we do associate creativity and finances. It's a very interesting part of the body. Now, I'm just giving you that as the beginning part, but there's much more. So this is the kind of power. The third center, which is your solar plexus, this has to do with your sense of self-esteem, how you like yourself. Whether or not you have a feeling that you like the way you look, you like your presentation, whether or not you feel highly criticized, highly uncomfortable with other people, this is that part of your body. Now, while I'm just skimming the top, as they say, I want you to note one thing. These three power centers have one thing in common. They're all focused on your external world. This is your external power base, and they're all focused in that direction. The next level has this. It has to do with your heart center. And your heart center is an internal sense. Now you've gone from external power to internal. This is your sense of love, your sense of charity, your sense of compassion, your sense of the other side, jealousy. Any of you ever felt jealous? I didn't think so. You see, I can tell that kind of group, right? But when, and if you know anybody who has, this is what happens. The energy leaves your heart. And it attaches to that person, and you are left with a burning sensation in your heart because jealousy burns. And that's how this feels, okay? It is a fire in your heart. It's a fire in your chest. This is also the center of forgiveness. This is the center of what I call the eye of the needle, this part of your body, right? Your throat. Here's another level of power, but this, like the others, everything that I'm talking about in this middle level of power is internal. This is your willpower. This is your center of choice. This is how you release power. What's so intriguing about this one is that if you are losing a lot of power from the first level, that is to say, a lot of your sense of self is controlled by groups and external dynamics like that, controlled by people who have money and you don't, therefore you're in that kind of dynamic. I'm going to tell you something. This part of you, your energy, your will, you hand it right over to them and you say to them, here, you manage my will, because you don't have enough will to do that. And I'm going to tell you the likelihood that you'll become an addict skyrockets. Whether that addict is to food or to alcohol or to some other substance or to peculiar control patterns, you will be an addict, because the only kind of power you can manage is the shadow side, because you've given your true side to another person. Okay? The next level. And that's your mental level, your sense of reality. This is a very different kind of power as well. This is the power you have to see clearly, to see reality through how you want to see reality. Now, the first level of power that we experience, we're going to call tribal power. And tribal, as I called it, is allowing a group situation to tell you what is real and what is not real. But what you need to understand is that when you're in that level of group power, the group is making choices for you, and in that choice is the choice of what reality is. Now let's imagine this. Let's say that you've had a wonderful experience. Let's say you've had a vision. That's fun. That's popular these days. You've had a vision. You've seen an angel. You're walking home. There's one, the angel. You and the angel go out to lunch. You chit-chat, you know. Then you come home, and you announce to the tribe, I've just had lunch with an angel. What'd you do today? And your tribe decides that because angel is not an experience they've had, you didn't have it. Now, unless you've got that kind of backbone where you can stand your ground and you say, look, I know what I experienced. You know where you live. I know where I live. And that's it. I mean, it may not be real for you, but it is for me. You're going to lose that experience because you're going to give the group that power to discern what is real for you. This is that part of reality. This is a powerful center of reality. Why? Let's transfer to illness. What if I said to you, you can heal this illness. You can heal that illness. So you go back to a tribe and you say, you know what? This person is encouraging me that I can heal the so-called unhealable illness. And this group says, oh, no, you can't. Show me the records. And you'll say, oh, no, I can't. Who's going to win, you or them? You've got to have an incredible sense of internal power to beat the tribal structure of external power. Let's go to the seventh. That's your grace bank account. I love that level of power. This is where you store your prayers. This is where you store your positive thoughts. This is where you store your beautiful attitudes about life. Those attitudes are like seeds that harvest returns. And that you put those returns in your system and those returns produce energy. That energy goes into your body. Not just that. I want to tell you something about grace. It's an amazing substance. You can transfer grace to another person. When you see them in a weakened situation, send a unit of grace to them. Just say, if I have an abundance in this account, zap it over to them. And if you don't think that that's powerful, I want you to think again. You have no idea, none, about how powerful that is. So I want you to think that every single time you have a positive thought or you say a prayer, you literally are putting gorgeous energy into the seventh chakra. Then there's your eighth. For several years, as a medical intuitive, I had no idea there was an eighth chakra. And then, as I did more and more readings, I came to realize there is. What is in your eighth chakra? I love this part of the body. This is where I get your contract. The agreements you made before you incarnated are in this part of your body. And when I pull those, what I see and how I see it is in your archetypal pattern. The agreements you made are manifested in archetypal design. Some people have the archetype, for example, the warrior, the hero. Altogether, each of us has a pattern of 12 archetypes that formulate the lessons we've agreed to live through that manage our spiritual maturity. Now, I'm going to give you another model to hold in your head about degrees of power and how to think of them. Tribal power can be thought of as eau de toilette, because that's all it's worth in one sense, in terms of the distance. You need a lot of it to get anything done. When you move into individual power, it's more like cologne. It can work. It can't work all day, but it can work for the afternoon, maybe for a couple hours in the morning. But when you move into symbolic power, when you're really at a high altitude and you're able to step out of yourself and begin to look at something from a transcendent point of view, you're dealing with perfume. You're dealing with a sense of power that goes the distance. And that's how you want to look at everything. When you look at anything in your life, you want to see it from the tribal level, the individual, and the symbolic. You want to put those three lenses in front of you and use each one to interpret every situation in your life. And then you have an incredible spectrum of power. I'll tell you a story about one man who manages to use these three levels of power in the most extraordinary way. When he was growing up, and he was 9, 10, and 11 years old, he fell into a tragic situation in which he became the victim of child abuse, very serious child abuse, because of an unusual situation that developed in his house. And for 3 years, he was abused very severely by a gentleman, but the reason why his family would not accept this, that they didn't want to hear it, is because in exchange for this abusive relationship, Ted was given money and his family needed money. And it wasn't that his family didn't love him, but they needed that money. There were a lot of other children, and it was a necessity. So when he would tell his family, this man is hurting me, this man is molesting me, this man is beating me up, they didn't believe him. They didn't want to believe him. By the time Ted was 16, 17 years old, he was in bad shape. He had been betrayed by the very system that should have protected him. He dropped out of school, he became an alcoholic, and he became a serious alcoholic. We're talking big time. By the time he was 19, he was almost dysfunctional, and he began a type of in and out of rehab centers and situations like that. But his alcoholism became one of those really mad types of alcoholism where when he drank, he would totally lose control of himself. He would begin to hallucinate. It was ferocious. Then he decided to turn to a counselor. He thought, if I don't get out of this, I'm going to die. I will kill myself. What inspired him still remains a mystery, but nevertheless, he was inspired. He goes to this counselor. This counselor said, you're going to need help getting out of this. You have to go back through a drug rehab situation again. So he did, and while he was going through that, he was determined not to re-enter his life in such a way that he interpreted those experiences from the same level. He didn't want to do that. He did not want that to take his power from his soul again at all. So he worked and he worked and he worked with a therapist to pull himself out so that he could symbolically look at his life. How did he do that? He saw this perpetrator as no longer someone who harmed him, but that he was watching an experience in which a young boy was harmed by a man. He could watch it from a distance. And as he watched it from a distance, he could feel himself pulling his spirit back slowly and slowly and slowly. As he did that, he then turned to the family, but he didn't see them as his own family anymore. He defined them as a family in a desperate situation trying to feed four other children who, in fact, were going hungry. As he began to piece together this very different model, his spirit started to come back and started to come back more and more and more because he could detach from it in a symbolic way. And the more he could do that, the more he could see the role he was playing by protecting his family and bringing them food. Now, he saw himself through the martyr archetype because that's exactly what he was living. From a symbolic level, an archetypal level, he was living the martyr drama. And he knew that if he continued to see himself as having sacrificed himself, martyred himself, and he believed that archetypal journey, he, in fact, would end up martyred at the hands of alcohol. But instead, he decided to turn around because what happens after, if you look at an archetypal experience of the martyr, from a positive point of view, the martyr becomes resurrected. It becomes a journey of the return to life, very similar to the way one could think of Gandhi as martyred. But was he really martyred? Yes, from one point of view. But in fact, from another, he became so empowered. And how did he become empowered? But as a symbol for everybody who feels downtrodden to, in fact, rise above that state of martyrdom. It's a very powerful journey that this man was on. And now he's somebody who absolutely inspires everybody else. He works with people. He shares his story. I can't tell you how sweet this story is. It's rather that he shares his story as a way to say, it's possible. It's possible.